Monday, December 3rd, 2018. The show is LA Podcast. The hosts are Alyssa Walker, Scott Frazier, and Hayes Davenport. We have so much to cover this week. We've developed a good system, I think, for coming up with stories, which is what we just text each other links. And then at the end of the week, we can just look through the links and look through the thread. And that's what we want to talk about. But it felt to me this week, there are so many stories kind of stuff that we've covered before. It felt like a season finale,
right?
Where like all these like long lost characters come back and they're like, remember me? And I was like, wow, where is that?
And there are even where more characters that we're not going to actually talk about who just find themselves on the cutting room floor looking at Christina Garcia here.
That's right. That's right.
We don't have time to talk about it. She got written out of the show.
I want to tell an LA story first that is from online that I thought was a lot of fun. That we were all kind of involved in this one, but I found it first, so I get to tell the story. So our friends at Nolympics, friends of the show, were posting about how in West LA on Palms Boulevard, they're putting these planters down the middle of medians on the street where people used to camp. And right. They're putting succulents in the planters and they're all spiky and they're not hospitable to people being able to live there or walk along that space. So they were upset about this and they wrote a Twitter message to Councilmember Mike Bonin that said, are you selling succulent sandwiches or displacing people on the streets to placate NIMBYs?
Because they said it was for a community garden.
I guess I should explain that. Yeah, they had said that the planters were for...
I mean, they could be making tequila. We don't know. You could still do things with succulents.
They said the planters were for a community garden, and then they put succulents in them, and Nolympics was pointing that out and asking if they were doing it to placate NIMBYs. They got a response from the good people at Esoteric. God love these guys. This is a tour company that, by all accounts... gives great tours. They give bus tours around LA.
Sort of like noir oriented, some of them at least.
Yes, showing tours. Where just different people were flayed.
Yeah. Yep.
And like where all kinds of like horrors happened around the city. But they do like a Bukowski tour. They do all this stuff. I'm going to give these guys a great ad. I've heard great things about these tours. They're also very active campaigners against new development in Los Angeles. They're basically activists for like any time something is being torn down, they will go protest it. And anytime a new building is being put up, they will often disagree with that happening as well.
Until somebody gets flayed there.
Yes.
That's the solution then.
So they responded to the accusation that Mike Bonin was placating NIMBYs with a tweet that said, wish you wouldn't use the N-word.
Right. This was maybe...
the N-word!
This was maybe the funniest thing that I saw all week. When you sent this to me, when you texted this to me, it made my entire day.
Oh, so my God. It's so wild. And it's still up. It's
well,
so many people responded to it. Scott got in there with a hot meme. They got great numbers. They did very good numbers, but they just still left it up there.
That's the bravest thing that they could do.
Oh, man.
No shame for them, which is...
No shame.
Which is, I think, actually how you arrive at referring to the NIMBY as the N-word.
NIMBY is the N-word.
In the first place.
And I saw some people responded that I like, which is like, it's actually an acronym.
Yeah.
That was the correction. Oh boy. Anyway, that's my LA story for this week. What do you guys have?
I mean, Scott, can you top that? Since that maybe could also be your own.
I cannot top that. I'm in the process of trying to get a some kind of festive Christmas decorations up in my apartment, and I feel like I've just noticed that the Christmas music starts being played out everywhere earlier and earlier. However, I still can't buy Christmas trees anywhere, which is leaving me kind of befuddled.
We went to Home Depot.
I don't go that way.
Around here, now we're going to get very local.
Hyperlocal news.
Yes. The guys at Hyperion Gelato, formerly Hyperion Shoe Repair, converted to Hyperion Gelato. They have shut down Hyperion Gelato for their December venture of selling Christmas trees by the Lithuanian church. And I'm almost positive that that operation is up and running now.
Okay, so I'm going to have to check that out. I just know it was before Thanksgiving. I was already hearing Christmas music, and it just led me to believe that it would be easier to find one than it has been. But I appreciate the hustle of the Hyperion Gelato folks. We should have a segment that's just like Virgil Hillhurst, our little intersection, where we just have a story from right there. But that was basically my story from this week.
I went to a thing at the Lithuanian church a few weeks ago that could have been my LA story. I went to the Lithuanian festival there, and it was great. And I met Vominos LA, great Twitter account at Vominos LA, at the festival. But I asked for like vegetarian stuff, and they gave me stuff that clearly just had a huge amount of meat in it. It was like potatoes in like an intestinal casing.
And what do you think they think you wanted when you ask for vegetarian?
I guess that's just what passes for vegetarian in Lithuania. I don't know. The one time my wife and I went to France, she asked for the vegetarian meal at like a bistro, and they gave her like an almost raw tuna steak.
my other story from this week is that so LA County has officially finalized our turnout, our voter results from the election. So I'm going to try and dig into some of those, including
on the imperishable post.
Yeah. On the precinct level, I'm going to see if I can get some turnout data going for that, which is going to take a while because there are 4,000.
You made a very interesting map. I just asked you a sort of half-hearted question via text, and like 20 minutes later, I get back this nice color-coded map, and I was like, oh, geez.
I just figured I might as well.
Showing where, how Prop 10 did in the different congressional districts of LA County is really interesting. And it showed that it really crushed in LA City.
Yeah.
Which throws the strategy of
a statewide
ballot measure into a further question.
It does.
Wait, just you would have to tell how close it was too, because I think that was.
Oh yeah.
Crazy. Oh yeah. So Prop 10, the repeal Costa Hawkins ballot measure that actually in the county ended up going down, still losing, but the margin ended up being 49.5% in favor of Prop 10 and 50.5% against.
Whoa.
Really, really close. And that's in the county.
That's in the county. So there were really large margins of support in, as you said, Hayes, LA City, the Arroyo cities, Burbank, Glendale, not Pasadena, but just like generally central parts of the county did.
I saw
well.
Some, the Housing is a Human Right people claiming that it did well in Pasadena. Maybe not in that whole congressional district, but in the city of Pasadena.
Okay. That makes sense.
And Santa Monica and Inglewood and other cities around LA, West Hollywood. If only there were some way to get rent control on the ballot in those cities individually and see if they could make it happen there. Oh, wait, they were trying to do that. And the people in charge of Prop 10 just totally abandoned them.
Yeah, so maybe that'll come back up again. I think it might.
That would be nice. Alyssa, were you on a panel this week?
I took the week
off. You moderated something, I thought.
I think
you
I took the week
definitely texted
off.
Us something that had the words Agenda 21 in it.
Yeah, that's right.
That's just
not
my regular. That's just my regular day-to-day Agenda 21 agenda. We did a festive thing also, which I highly recommend. We went to see the parade of boats in the harbor.
What is that?
I hope I got it right. Parade of lights.
Here, I'll
or
look
something.
It up while All you're. Right.
It was on the first day of Christmas. I was sort of saying the first day of Christmas. on December 1st. It's where you go down to the harbor in the port of LA and people like dress up their boats in lights and inflatable Santas and all sorts of things, and then
could
you
it
can
have
like
been LA Harbor Holiday Afloat. Oh no, you're right. Yeah, the 2018 Holiday Parade of Boats.
Parade of Boats. Okay, wow. So you and you can go wherever. You can go to like that great fish market. You could go just walk along the waterfront and all the boats are coming down with these big old like 19th century boats they have down there too, all decked out. And also the rest of the port looks very festive because there's those beautiful lights on the bridge and like a lot of like the, you know, container ship like robot arms are like dancing to the music. And then the boats themselves look like, you know, they're very brightly colored containers, like
that sounds
presents.
Fun.
Oh, cute.
But it was just, you know, a kind of an amazing thing that you can go in our harbor and drive around at night with probably a lot of intoxicated people on boats and really get into the spirit. It was very special. I highly recommend it.
Your daughter is a real bus fanatic, but I think there's a void for your son to become a true boat freak.
He was okay with it. He didn't like the life preserver very much.
Oh, okay.
Kind of getting up in his
you
leg.
You have real fans and bus freaks. Yes. That is the,
They can still
rail fans. I call trainiacs.
You're supposed to call them
that's a better
foamers,
name.
Right?
What's that?
Foamers. That's a true like rail fanatic.
Why foamers?
I don't know.
Foaming at the mouth.
Yeah. I mean, that's just what I was told.
It's not topic specific.
What my daughter is.
Rabid.
Yeah. They liked it.
Oh, and briefly, I was on TV this week. On Inside the Issues with Alex Cohen on the new LA Spectrum One network, the new New York One style 24-hour local news station that we have been very excited about. And that was really fun to go on and talk about school bonds.
Yep.
And Scott is going to be on the show on Tuesday talking about, what are you going to talk about?
I'm going to talk about the Blue Wave.
Blue Wave.
Which is the only thing that I really want to talk about right now anyway, so.
God, and imagine the hits on the Imperishable Post after that show. I'm jealous.
I do appreciate the bump because I can tell, you know, when I looked at the turnout for Prop 10 in congressional districts, I saw that it failed in Katie Hill's district by
really
10 points. But despite that, Katie Hill won by 8 points.
Well,
so
I
attribute that all to you, basically.
That's fair because did I tell you that going around knocking on doors, so many people would answer the door and be like, okay, I'll vote for Katie. Well, first it would be like she supports the gas tax and like rent control.
Yeah.
And I would have to totally sell out those things and be like, that has nothing to do with her. Please vote for her. I don't whatever on those other things. So it is because of me. It's because instead of being like, excuse me, sir, the gas tax is also good. Like affirming his belief that this Katie Hill supporter was all about the gas tax.
So my blog hits are going to be through the roof is what I'm saying.
God.
Every time you mention it, it's just thousands of hits.
Let's get into our first story of the week. Our first return character, Elon Musk and the Boring Company. Flashback to our second episode, a pre-Alyssa episode, where Scott and I got exclusive scoops on the details of the Boring Company plan and then never got any exclusive news ever again.
I don't think we even really tried for exclusive news again after that.
It's a standard that we just could not sustain. Alyssa, can you walk us through some of the history of this tunnel along the Sepulveda Pass that the Boring Company was building?
Okay, so this is what we thought we knew, I guess like a year ago, right? It's been
over a year.
I mean,
but
about a year ago, I think there was like, we're digging this tunnel under Sepulveda and it's going to be part of the loop, which is the, we don't really know what to call it. It's a mini subway or something, personal subway.
Yeah, no, it's like in between personal transit and mass transit.
Maybe cars can still go on it.
Yeah.
We think cars can also go down these like car elevators that are in people's garages and then sink down into the tubes. So the plan was this big kind of citywide network, and part of it would go to Dodger Stadium, which is what they announced more recently in the last few months. So, but there was always a part of it that was supposed to go under Sepulveda, and the idea was a test tunnel being dug under Sepulveda, which approvals were going to be fast-tracked in some way, like you know, going against every years of approval process that we usually make people do to tunnel under our cities.
It wasn't going to have to go through the
Yeah, it was going to be like somehow waived by a city council, or they said they wanted to approve that, you know, exception. And the idea was the part being dug under Sepulveda would be used eventually as part of this citywide network. But then this week, all of a sudden, there was this lawsuit that came out a while ago from some neighbors who didn't want it to be dug under their homes.
In Brentwood.
Yeah, Brentwood neighbors against, you know, tunnels or something. Yeah. And Elon Musk like jumps onto Twitter and is like, oh, no problem. We never wanted that test tunnel anyway. We're good to go with the rest of the network. But the network needed the Sepulveda tunnel. Am I getting that wrong?
No, like, I don't think it was really confusing. I think they announced that they were building a 6.5 mile tunnel under Sepulveda. And then they produced a map that showed like that the network would extend out of that tunnel. But then I think they had to say that was just a test tunnel and wasn't going to be a part of the larger network.
Okay.
Because there's some law that you can't do piecemeal construction. You can't approve the beginning part of a site without environmental review and then do the full rest of it or something.
Okay.
So they kind of had to change the plan. Then they got sued, you know, by these Brentwood homeowners. And then they settled with the Brentwood homeowners. And I think we have to assume that they ended up having to pay them a bunch of money for this project.
This is how this usually works. Yes. Right.
The green mailing. We've talked. Another return character from the show.
So the important thing here is that, at least as far as I'm concerned, is that they are now saying what you said is correct. So they were seeking a categorical exemption. The LA City Council was basically falling all over themselves to grant this exemption from environmental quality analysis to the boring company. Anybody who had like the slightest amount of domain knowledge about California Environmental Quality Act was saying, no, you can't do that. You definitely can't do that when you're going out and saying you're going to build this entire network. It's only for these small projects. Also, Metro has the ultimate authority over who can actually tunnel where in the county for transportation purposes. So, but now what they're saying that this was only something that they were ever going to do as like a proof of concept is totally a lie. It's not true. Because
they already have a proof of concept tunnel that they're going to open up for rides or something.
The entire
next week, right?
Reason that the Boring Company exists is because Elon Musk was sitting in traffic on the 405 and tweeted out, traffic is driving me nuts. I'm going to build a tunnel boring machine and just start digging. I am actually going to do this.
I want to point out something I think is funny about that tweet. It was from December 17th, 2016. And I just think that December of 2016 is a funny time to be like, traffic's driving me crazy. Yeah, but all the things going on at that time.
His entire thing was, it is too hard to get from Bel Air to Hawthorne. So to say, like, I never intended to actually make part of my network be
right
parallel to the 405 is ludicrous.
And it's also acting like this lawsuit from the Brentwood homeowners was of no consequence.
Yeah, no big deal.
When they had to say to the homeowners that they were not going to go forward with this project because of the lawsuit, essentially.
Right.
I think it's just as likely that they've decided to move on to other cities that are more amenable to letting them do this stuff, where it's easier to build stuff than in LA. Maybe other kinds of projects, maybe other kinds of tunnel projects that don't transport people. I saw an interview where Elon has been talking a lot more about utility tunnels, which compared to a subway system is a lot easier.
We don't need innovation for that. I mean, they literally have a TBM that dug sewers. Like, that's the diameter I mean, are they just going to help people dig sewers faster? I mean, that's great.
Maybe they have a way to do that way faster and cheaper, and they could save the city a lot of money. I will say, like, it is hard to really lock into any of these projects because they do change all the time.
Because they're not real.
They built the Hawthorne Tunnel. Like,
yeah, I mean, so that's supposed to open.
Thing breaking through.
I mean, I've been there. I've saw it. Yeah. It's there. I mean, there are going to be rides. Boring Company, The Ride, opens next week or something. And you'll be able to go see it for yourself. I don't know how it's going to work. I don't know what you're going to be able to ride on or where you're going. It's just for fun. But if they, and then the Dodger thing, I can't believe somebody hasn't already sued to stop the dugout loop.
It does seem the one difference is they are going through the EIR. They're going through the traditional right. environmental review channels. Right. So they couldn't sue on the exact same grounds
yeah.
as the Brentwood people did. When has that ever stopped a homeowners association or like a neighborhood coalition from suing for one of these things? Whether anyone has sued yet, they were going to eventually. People always do in these situations. Yeah. It just has to be something that you're
I would not
prepared
be surprised
for.
If something would materialize with the Dodger project as well.
Sure. But. And it sounds like you're egging people on to go do this, but it doesn't matter what we say. It always happens.
It will happen. And I also, I mean, let's all go ride the ride and see what we, you know, can learn, because I'm just really curious about how you manage all the people are showing up at SpaceX trying to climb in this tunnel.
This project, this tunnel is a quarter mile away from the Target husk. You think Doug Haynes, who got that thing to stop that from being built for 4 years, is going to let a tunnel go under his neighborhood?
What if we turn Target husk into...
That would own...
Into
you leave
what?
A Target husk.
Where it was like you go down the middle
into
of...
Into the entrance to the
into
tunnel.
Into the entrance of the tunnel. And it would like be this amazing like multimodal...
You leave the Target husk as it is. So it can feel like you're like discovering... you're like a kid who's like wandering onto the property and you find, what, a tunnel? And then you get right. up in this like spacecraft. And do you end up in a baseball game?
I'm terribly concerned that you're giving Elon Musk ideas right now. Because that sounds like the kind of Neo-Tokyo mango shit that him and Grimes would go for. I don't know.
Did you guys see the new video?
I did not. I haven't watched it yet.
Okay. L.A. is increasing speed limits. This is another return character.
Speed limits.
Speed limits. Those kinds.
Assemblymember Laura Friedman came on the show to talk about her efforts to change this policy, which is that LA is not allowed to lower speed limits on any of its streets or even analyze them without raising them first.
Yeah.
Also, Laura Nelson, another previous guest on the show, has reported on this extensively. She was out this week with another article saying that LA is considering raising speed limits on 100 miles of streets in the city, including some of the stretches in the valley that are already incredibly dangerous. Reseda, Victory, San Vicente Boulevard and Mid-Wilshire. A huge, huge stretch of street in the city. Crazy. Do you think it's crazy to say that somebody will die because of this?
No, people are definitely going to die because of this. It's a fact. I think that we have already seen... Laura Nelson has been covering this story excellently for a number of years at this point. And she noted in her article that this follows another previous 100 miles of speed limit increases that the city did last year. She had an article from back in the summer of this year that actually talked about... Zelda in the valley and how the increases there had been followed immediately afterwards by increases in vehicle collisions, mm-hmm. people crashing. And we know that the higher the speed limit is, the more likely whoever is involved with it, whether they're in the car or outside of the car, whoever is involved is more likely to die. So I don't think it's crazy at all to say that this is directly going to be the result is people are going to get injured and die.
I just want to correct something that I said earlier. It wasn't that they're not allowed to analyze or lower speed limits. I believe that they aren't, but they're also not allowed to write tickets.
That's what it is.
They can't write speeding tickets on these streets without raising the speed limit.
Well,
first.
It could be raised or lowered. They just have to do a speed study. And if they do a study and it shows that the 85% of the drivers are going a certain speed, they have to change it. Some of them are getting lowered, like certain parts. I think it said Alvarado and from Hoover.
11 miles.
To somewhere.
11
yeah.
miles are getting lowered.
Yeah, 11. Great. Compared so only to, go there.
Compared to 100 that are getting 100. Raised by 5 miles an hour.
Which is
and
so funny.
2 miles
people,
are getting raised by 10 miles an hour.
People complain about they're stuck in traffic, but clearly everyone can still go as fast as they
yeah,
can.
Yeah. So the way that this works and this system probably sounds very bizarre to our listeners. I would imagine it's incredibly infuriating to as somebody who has also been following it for a while. This is based on a state law, as Assemblymember Friedman talked to us about. This is based on a state law that was put into place in order to prevent municipalities from ticketing drivers unfairly. So the way that they set about accomplishing that is by making it the law in the state of California that speed limits on municipal roads have to be set based on what is called the prevailing speed. And the way that is determined is they have people from, at least in LA, they have people from the Department of Transportation or BOE go out there and actually just like do a survey of the speeds that people are actually driving, whether or not they're driving lawfully. And then they have to take the 85th percentile of every driver that they monitor. And they have to base the speed limit on that speed. So especially in the valley, a lot of, like we said, a lot of these are in the valley where the roads are extremely wide. They're extremely straight. They're basically runways.
Especially at night. And now we know that these are streets where you cannot get a speeding ticket by law.
Right.
So when they're doing these studies, they're probably, I mean, we know people go way too fast on these streets. The speed limit is being raised in a lot of these streets to 40 and 45 miles an hour, which is the speed at which if you are hit by a car, you know the stats on this, Alyssa. Are you 80% likely to die at that speed? Something like that?
I mean, yeah. It's basically if you're going 40 miles an hour and you're a pedestrian, the car's going 40 miles an hour, you're a pedestrian. I think it's 80 or 90% likely that you will die.
Whereas compared to 20 miles an hour, it's
20 miles an hour, you're just very likely to live. Yeah, it's like the opposite. So it's like and especially if you're an older adult or if you're a child, I mean, it's just the curve keeps going up and up and up based on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, cars weigh so much more than people. Even the addition of 5 miles an hour from 40 to 45 is you're just basically guaranteeing that people cannot
survive
these collisions.
And especially if you're get hit by an SUV, which is our
even heavier
new American pastime is to only buy SUVs and light trucks. And the way that hits you, you're also more likely to speed in an SUV because of the power that the car bestows upon you.
So as you said, that has an impact on whether or not law enforcement can actually give out speeding tickets. But I think the key thing here is that for a while, we just didn't do these surveys. We didn't spend the money to actually survey the roads. That is how they lapsed into having unenforceable speed limits because the state law requires that they be updated every so often. This sort of like cyclical, we're going to go send somebody out and see what speed people are driving at and then raise the speed limit is an obvious feedback loop where every time you do it,
They're going a little faster every time.
So then you're going to just keep raising the speed limit and raising the speed limit. It's preposterous. The cases where the speed limit is actually getting lowered are typically in cases where there is some sort of extenuating circumstance, like it's a low visibility environment or I guess traffic congestion is just getting so much worse that there's never a time that people are going above the speed limit. But it's a clear problem.
Yeah. It's great that Lara Freeman tried to do something about this, but all that came out of it is a study. The law that ended up being passed was to initiate
a study. The classic
of these studies.
The classic way to not do something.
And because we have to bring up again, AAA.
AAA, that's right, is a lobbying group.
Yeah, which is basically making it more dangerous on your streets with your money that everybody is a AAA member. So cut up that card. The motel discounts are not worth it.
Moving on, the Corrado family, the family of Melita Corrado, who was shot by police at the Silver Lake Trader Joe's in July, they are suing LAPD for civil rights violations, battery, excessive force, negligence, infliction of emotional distress, failure to adequately train officers, and conspiracy to cover up misconduct. It's a lawsuit from her father and her brother. Just a couple more updates in that case. I don't know if people know. Gene Evan Atkins, the gunman who police were trying to shoot at, who was running into the Trader Joe's, has been charged with her murder,
right,
with Melita Corrado's murder, even though he was not the person that fired the gun,
yep,
that killed her. Apparently, that is legal to charge the person who police were trying to kill when they killed someone else with that person's murder.
It's not just legal. It's common practice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He is also defending himself in court. I read a couple articles about the court proceedings, which have been pretty unusual. But it's still very early in Michael Moore's tenure. The department is being sued for murder. We said at the time that I didn't really think the department handled it correctly. I think, yep, there was a lot they could have done in terms of just saying this was clearly not how this should have played out. You know, intense situation and all that, but we need to train our officers a little differently so this doesn't happen again. Maybe they thought that would open them up to this kind of lawsuit, but that has happened regardless.
I mean, so the KTLA article that I read about this lawsuit, one of the things that was striking to me is that their lawyer actually said, you know, like elaborating on some of the accusations that they make in the allegations that they make in the lawsuit, that they believe that the shooting was out of policy, that they say that the requests to get more information about how and why the shooting happened, how and why Melita Corrado was in the line of fire when officers opened fire, and whether or not she could have been attended to, whether or not medical services were appropriately used in this circumstance, is very interesting to me. They say that the officers, they believe, were either poorly trained or failed to employ their training, which is interesting because one of the things that we talked about right after this happened was in the press conference, Michael Moore came out and gave a very, this was maybe 2 or 3 days after, mm-hmm, the fact, gave a very forceful defense of the officers.
They did what they had to do.
They did what they had to do.
They acted appropriately.
And even more than that, I think this quote from back in July of this year is kind of interesting in retrospect, because it seems like it's really prejudging whatever the findings were going to be. So as you said, he said, "I believe that it's what they needed to do in order to defend the people of Los Angeles, defend people in that store, and to defend themselves. I ask that you place yourself in these two officers' positions and ask yourself, what would you have done?" Mm-hmm. And how could anybody make that call,
yeah,
especially when they're not releasing information about the details of the circumstances, even to the family of the victim, Melita Corrado? So that seems like a very forceful statement to make, especially in light of the fact that at the time, none of the evidence was in at that point.
Yeah. The family says they also haven't turned over some of the video from different cop cars. Right. And I think some body cams, some has been turned over, but some has not, including, I think, like you're saying, video from when she was getting medical care and things like that, like whether that was handled correctly. So they don't feel like they've been furnished with all with everything they need to sort of know what happened to her. That will be interesting to see how that case turns out. Our new installment, Huizar, : Say It Ain't So. So here's how we're going to do this one. Oh, by the way, Beverly Hills 90210 got on TV on Spectrum. Alex Cohen said it, and I did give you credit, Alyssa, for coming up with it. So how this one is going to go is we'll say Huizar, and then we'll have the Weezer say the, like, bah, bah, wow, wow, bah, bah, wow, wow, and then Say It Ain't So. So it goes, Huizar. say it ain't so.
It's never not funny.
It's too bad. It's too bad. I feel like this one is not going to have a very long shelf life. I feel like this segment is...
No, no, we've got the whole FBI. There could be a federal lawsuit out of this. True. There could be trials. Come on.
It already lasted longer than we thought it was going to last.
Absolutely. So this week, the new installment of the Jose Huizar saga. He has already been accused by former aides of discrimination and having them pick up his dog's poop and working on lots of stuff for his wife's campaign that they weren't supposed to be working on. And he has his office and home have been raided by the FBI for a separate case. This week, it came out that Jose Huizar's wife, Rochelle, who was until last week running to replace him in Council District 14 in 2020, was a paid fundraiser for Salesian, Bishop Mora Salesian in Boyle Heights, a private school where he went. Jose Huizar went and is like a very proud alumnus. And
right.
Yeah, says that it like got him on the right track. And Huizar is accused of having his aides work on her fundraisers, help her raise money for the school, and also going to lobbyists, city contractors, developers, billboard companies that had business with his office and hitting them up for donations for this school in the many thousands of dollars.
And that's what the FBI was going there for?
So this is my thing. No. I think we're still working. I think we're getting closer. Let's put it that way. I think we're on the right track. But I don't think we're quite at FBI raiding your home and office level.
This is just something else the dogs sniffed out in the hard drives.
I mean, they keep coming back to the box labeled fundraising, right?
Yeah.
But no,
how much can have been in that box? One guy was carrying it.
I do feel like, you know, that there is an interesting through line in this most recent bit of reporting by Adam Elmarek, David Zonizer, and Emily Alpert Reyes from the LA Times,
yes.
Which is that they got a number of people on record, not named, but people going on record saying that Jose Huizar personally asked them to make donations.
Yes.
We're like, I feel like very close to a situation where I it's not in the article. I don't know that anything of this kind has been broached so far, but it does feel like it could be dangerous territory for Jose Huizar if any of those donations were of a quid pro quo nature. We know that these are people that were working with his office. There's nothing that says currently that those donations were made as a condition of being able to push certain things through his office, certain approvals through. He obviously sat and chaired the powerful planning and land use
and represents
committee.
Downtown, where the most development is happening in the city. And they do give a few examples where, like, Greenland USA, that developed the Metropolis Project right by Staples Center, were some of the most they gave $25,000 to the school.
Right.
And they got $18.7 million in financial aid for the Hotel Indigo,
yeah,
which is part of that project. Another repeat character from this series, the handouts to hotels, right, downtown.
So what are your questions about where this goes next? Because I have some things that are like on my mind, but I'm curious what happens from here for this, because this sounds potentially very serious. It's not clear.
Well, I mean, I think the most we've ever been right on this show, we've always been some degree of right with everything that we have said. But the most we've ever been right is saying when a story is like, when there like more will come out from the story. I remember when Sebastian Ridley Thomas quit the assembly in our first episode,
right,
when he quit the assembly, we said that we were going to hear a lot more about that. And we did. A huge amount more is going to come out from this office in the next few weeks. I think we are already into resign territory with the stuff that is out. between the accusations from all the different aides, even if some of these things are politically charged, hit jobs, stuff that he has done in the past but is now coming up for some politically motivated reason, it doesn't really matter. There's too much at this point. And I still think that we haven't reached the core of what I believe is fundraising impropriety. I won't even say fundraising, like money raising impropriety coming out of this council member's office.
Well, I think in the story you can tell that there are a number of curious timings, you know, where there are individual lobbyists or as we talked about with Greenland, major developers getting some sort of financial benefit from the city immediately after having been asked to donate something to Bishop Salesian.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I said, it's not quid pro quo yet, but it seems like it's pretty close. And it also seems like to me, with the number of people that are on record saying that this is something that Huizar regularly did during his tenure, which for now continues as city council member, that it seems like there are people that are probably worried right now surrounding Jose Huizar.
Yeah.
And I think that you're right that more will come out of this, because it seems like the dam might burst at any minute in terms of people wanting to CYA.
Totally.
So, yeah.
Even if it goes in the other direction with, you know, he does Greenland gets this huge contract for this hotel downtown and they get this giant handout from the city for it. Even if after the fact he goes to them and says, like, well, they got, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars like out of my office, they can throw 25,000 to my alma mater, to this school.
Yeah.
Even that, I would say, is improper. Just the expectation of all business
completely
having been done. I don't know if it's illegal. Do you think it's illegal, Alyssa?
I mean, isn't that just like so weird? I mean, it's like, how could you ever approve another project in that district ever again? I mean, by them or by anyone else? I mean, it's very clear that there's maybe some kind of deals.
Totally. And like in terms of their personal profiting from it, this was his wife's paid position.
Right.
Yep.
To do this job. We don't know how much she was paid, but it seems like not enough.
Less than $100,000 a year.
Okay, then it seems like she should have been making a lot more with how much money they were bringing
in. But then what was the whole... Yeah, that's the whole thing that I don't get is like, why did she announce her candidacy and so early? And what was like the strategy there? Because that's the whole thing that is just like making me very interested in this story is why she was involved and why she was going to take his seat.
I think she wanted to run. I think they've always been kind of a couple like doing stuff together, seems like. And I think they got blindsided by not necessarily the accusations of sexual impropriety, which have happened for him in the past, but by the FBI raid. I think they had absolutely no idea that was coming. That's
right.
The only way I can explain her deciding to run when she did. And now seeming in some of her statements, seeming to kind of separate herself her husband.
It did not seem like the accusations of sexual impropriety or harassment in the workplace were going to, we'll never know now, but it didn't seem like that was going to lead to her dropping
out
of the race.
They were going to power through that.
When the FBI raid broke, she was out very soon after. So
yep.
I think that was definitely the precipitating factor there. And my personal question is, if we are talking about the improper direction of funds, which it seems like is the direction that this is heading, then to me, like, I'm very curious what else is out there, because it seems unlikely to me. This is perhaps a very easily made connection because Rochelle Huizar was working at this school, but it seems very likely to me that you, even if you were the proudest alum in the whole world, you wouldn't just say, yeah, donate a couple $1,000 to my school and we're good.
Yeah.
Do they have to give the money back?
Well, they got it back in tax. Oh, you mean now?
Does the school?
Does the school?
Does the school have to get the money back?
Who knows? That is a good question. He will not have the multi-purpose room named after
him. Yeah, he's going to get taken off the new wing for sure. Jeff's being built by Greenland, USA. Wow. What are the chances?
It's a like 200 unit condo building to school for adult students.
It's got a dog run on the roof.
More to, we will hear that music sting again, I promise you. Other city council news, of course, Mitchell Englander, council member for CD12 up in the Valley, has abdicated his position as of a month or so ago in order to pursue other opportunities in lobbying for sports arenas, mostly around the upcoming Olympics. So he is pulling out at the end of the year, and Herb West, in the past, when Felipe Fuentes did this in Council District 7, they just left it just abandoned for a year plus, I think.
Right.
But now Herb Wesson, council president, is considering putting someone in the district to manage it temporarily. And his choice is Greig Smith. I think it's Greig.
With the spelling, it has to be
G-R-E-I-G,
right?
Yeah. But I've never really heard it pronounced before. And this is a name that I had only sort of heard. He was the council member prior to Mitch Englander. But I did some reading on him, and he is a real character. He's basically Bosch. He was a cop before he ran for city council.
Okay.
Yes. But then he did not stop being a cop when he became city council member.
What?
He was a reserve officer. He and Dennis Zine, also a council member up in CD3, I think, were both reserve officers, and they would go around while they were city council members with guns at night and just like bust heads in their district. They got in a fight with a guy that they saw trying to rob a car. They both got maced by, I think, a security guard who was also involved in the fight. And then that raised conversations about should council members be allowed to wander their districts armed, making arrests. I read this old article about it from 2003. Bernard Parks, the former LAPD chief who was councilman at the time, was like, stop doing this. This is insane that Bill Bratton was the chief. Like, you can't keep letting them do this. And also, what does it mean for their superior officer? How do they punish these reserve officers who are council members? This is crazy.
I mean, I'd be okay with it as long as they were only giving out speeding tickets.
Which they're not allowed to do. But they should get a special exemption. The council member, council member officers should be allowed to give out speeding tickets.
Protecting pedestrians. Okay.
And so then when Greig Smith left the council, still got the bug, still unable to get, he's addicted to the game. And so he goes to the LAPD and says, hey, basically just give me old murder cases to solve. Like, you know, some retired people do puzzles. He solves murders. And there was a big case a couple years ago where he actually did. There was a funny article that I read about this where there was a murder in East L.A. That they said the Greig Smith essentially solved, when really he ran a DNA test that was not available at the time. And it did sort of pinpoint who the murderer was. But that's something, you know, not a lot of former council members can say that they did that.
Now, Smith was Englander's boss previously. Englander was his chief of staff, which is like the most common way that anybody becomes a council
Mitch
member.
Mitch O'Farrell was Garcetti's. Mike Bonin was his predecessors.
Yeah. So, there's kind of like I guess, continuity for the district. Maybe that's why Wesson is doing this.
He's also a Republican, so Wesson feels like he can just like put someone in there to be a steady hand on the wheel.
A steady 14-1 vote that you can rely on in the council.
I'm told most of the time, what happened with Felipe Fuentes, for example, when they leave it just unrepresented, the former chief of staff kind of makes decision will like advise the council on different moves for that district. Anyway, Greig Smith. That's Greig Smith. Will he be allowed to carry his gun onto the council? when he's put back in. I'm sure that's a big, you know, that's his one demand. Obviously, he's not going to give up his gun. The LAPD, Alyssa, you sent us a link this week, that the LAPD is working on a new pedestrian safety initiative. You love pedestrian safety. You must be so happy about this. They're finally focusing on keeping pedestrians safe.
Well, they're too focused on this idea that they have to somehow stop jaywalking. And this has been going on for a few years. So they're big. They had like this video they made a few years ago that was like, wear bright clothing and make eye contact or all these different rules. Like you got to be safe.
You must have seen that video because you famously wear very bright clothing.
Everywhere I go and I just like stare down the cars as they go by. But if they have tinted windows and they're in an SUV, it's really hard for me to make eye contact. But all these stupid rules, they keep doing this. And we talked last episode, was it last episode, about this great change that they are going to kind of decriminalize crossing the street.
Yes. And changing. Just cartwheeling back and forth.
Yeah, like using the countdown time when you're going across. You're allowed to step into the crosswalk and use a crosswalk as it's to be used. And then they like do this, like they come around again and be like, oh, it's getting dark out, guys. Like you got to be careful walking across the street.
So what is the pedestrian safety initiative that they're doing?
I guess like it's good that they're still not going to give out. They said they're not going to give out tickets. You'll apparently get lectured on what you're wearing and maybe they'll slap you on the wrist, maybe physically, I don't know. And they'll say, here's a high visibility vest or a blinking LED light. And I don't know if you're supposed to wear that like in shame, like the rest of the night or every time you return to LA's streets, or I'm not sure. It was like they got these freebies and now they're going to give them out. So they'll be like still doing sting operations to give out this merch.
And they make you take it?
Like what can you do? You like throw it on the ground and be like, no.
I think I would throw it out like immediately in front of them.
I wouldn't mind one of those blinking lights. I wouldn't mind for like, you know, certain like
for
emergencies.
Christmas decorations, for your tree. But there is this idea that like when it gets dark out earlier, right? I mean, yes, it is more dangerous because of visibility concerns. Let's not go around. I'm sure they're not going to be walking around targeting pedestrians. I'm sure they'll be driving around in their patrol cars and like jumping out or whatever. But I think like targeting the drivers is maybe the better idea here. Looking at drivers who don't stop in crosswalks. If there was a high visibility campaign to put vests on those cars that block crosswalks. On the car. Like just strapping on a vest,
that
a large vest.
A large vest. Across the chassis.
High visibility. But that's what we need to be focusing on. And every city does something like this, especially when it gets dark earlier. They all try to blame it on pedestrians just because of the light thing.
Well, Chief Michael Moore, so I don't know if you saw the quote, says, we have defensive driving. We should have defensive walking as well. It makes sense. It's only fair, right. Alyssa. You have to admit it's fair. We have defensive driving. Why should you have to defensive walk?
We have defensive driving as a concept that exists. Is that what you say?
Like, what does that mean to me? I'm like, as a defensive walker, what does that mean? Cowering in fear?
You also don't get...
Like, how do you...
And why stop with defensive sitting? Why stop with walking? Defensive brunch.
When you get a ticket, which obviously you can't actually do in LA.
It's illegal.
It's impossible for them to give you a ticket. But when you get a ticket when you're driving in LA, they don't force you to do defensive driving. They're after, do they?
What's that? It's not relevant to the conversation.
I guess he's saying we will lecture you at driver's ed sometimes, mandatory driver's ed, were it possible for us to give out speeding tickets. So what we've learned in this episode is there in a situation where you are running across Reseda Boulevard because there isn't a crosswalk within half a mile in either direction of
you. Or the countdown timer is too... Or I guess you can't get a ticket. Okay, go on. Yeah, so you cross because there's not enough infrastructure to cross the street safely.
Yes. A car almost murders you going 95 miles an hour
right.
down Reseda Boulevard.
The new speed limit of Reseda Boulevard yes. after the speed studies have been conducted.
Right. Or even now, they aren't allowed to give speeding tickets.
Right.
So that car goes by. A cop is parked right there in his cop car. Like you said, is not on foot. Is obviously right. sitting in his car. Nothing he can do about that car that's speeding
He's
by.
Gone.
But you get a vest.
You get a vest.
You get a vest.
And you then get a free vest out of
do
it.
Do they help you like walk across the street after
next
that?
Time,
or do they like drive you
next
to the
time
next?
Time you're crossing the street, you will briefly be visible to that car before they
right, before
just
they hit
atomize you, with their SUV.
And the blinking light is like how they can find you when you're like
exactly
800 yards down the street.
And more policing news, a new sheriff, Alex Villanueva, was that fine? Was it only this week that it was finally announced? We called it so long ago.
Yeah, it was this past, it was this past week. I think actually about a week and a half ago, there was finally a concession from,
that's right,
from Jim McDonald.
That's right. He showed up and he did what he said he was going to do. And he fired 16 members of the top brass
right.
of the sheriff's department. He really cleaned house.
It's like Soviet purge level.
It really was. The yeah. undersheriff, all four assistant sheriffs, and lots of heads of different departments, heads rolled. I want to talk to James Sexton about that. I'll check in with him how he feels, because he had alluded to us that a lot of the top brass under McDonald were former Lee Baca people. Who he thought to be sort of dirty, or at least tarnished by the Baca administration.
When we spoke with James Sexton, who of course played a pivotal role in the Baca era scandals being exposed nationally, that was actually the most striking moment of that conversation to me, was that he said to us, somebody needs to clean house at the top of the organization. That was the takeaway.
Yes.
They all need to
and
go.
And I have to imagine that some of those people, since he got rid of basically everyone at the top, that those were some of the people that James Sexton was referring to. At the same time, he got rid of the two new constitutional policing advisors
yep.
that had come in under the McDonald administration for being narcs, essentially.
He
didn't
it
say
a
that.
Dog and pony show.
Yeah, he said it was unnecessary.
He had,
for this department to be given advice on how to obey the Constitution.
Yeah, this is actually something that is fairly commonplace in other major police departments. The LAPD has one that they put in place after the Rampart scandal. You know, like this is the kind of thing that allows for greater public accountability and hopefully the revision of police practices that are leading to unconstitutional practices. It's worth noting that this is something that McDonald advocated for. And I believe that the constitutional policing advisors, there were two of them, had both just started in their
yep.
positions.
Wow.
And the first thing that they were tasked with taking on was the was one of the investigations into the racial profiling
yep.
by the highway enforcement team operating on the 5, the drug enforcement team there. So they will no longer be doing that.
Yep.
There are several other investigations in place. One of them is by the Civilian Oversight Commission, which Villanueva has made no secret of the fact that he also does not view as a legitimate source of direction within the department. One of those is by the Inspector General, which I think now has to take on an additional burden of getting to the root of whether or not the practices in place by the Sheriff's Department are constitutional.
Yep.
And of course, we have a Justice Department now that just announced that it is no longer interested in matters of constitutionality in local police enforcement and will not be putting in place consent decrees. So we're on our own
yes.
here. And it is
and
troubling.
Heaven forbid that anything comes out in the future. I think it's very unlikely to happen that another scandal emerges from
totally.
This
no,
department.
What could happen?
We right. only had to come up with a segment for this show that talks about two of them each time because there were so many.
Throw an extra one for free.
And what does it look like if your first act, you got rid of the constitutional policing advisors, the first thing that comes out? Like, how do you handle it when you've already said that the like your main priority is less oversight over this department? I see a lot of people saying, like, the deputies union was the biggest donor to Villanueva's campaign.
Right.
And so they're saying, like, how does he repay back the deputies union now? And it's like, I think he kind of just did.
Yeah. And they are they have been very big fans of him.
And they
he's one of them.
These constitutional policing advisors.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And I think that there is definitely a concern from when you're talking about an organization that needs the level and the extent of reform that the LA Sheriff's Department does at all levels. I think that one of the things that we talked about from the beginning was that you had McDonnell, who was more focused, so he said, on the deputies, and you had Villanueva, who was more concerned on about the top level brass and wanted the deputies to just be left to do their job, is what he keeps saying about it. So I think it's concerning that this is his first action, getting rid of the constitutional policing advisors, regardless of whether or not he thinks that it is meaningful oversight. I think the optics are particularly bad at this point in time.
Replacing them with basically nothing. There's, like, he talked about some kind of monthly meeting. He's going to be in front of the media more, he said. If they're already turning stuff over to the LA Times that McDonnell withheld, I think part of that is Villanueva is very eager to turn over anything that happened under the McDonnell administration to show that, like, things were not well run when he was in charge. Who knows if he'll keep doing that now that he is in charge.
Yeah. And I think that
Ellis is just making a face, just like a grimace.
It's great news.
This could be really bad. It's like setting up for
we should say people we have reason to believe that getting rid of the people who were entrenched in these higher up administrative positions in the department is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
I would also say that, I mean, maybe this stands out more to me given my background in public administration, how you do that matters. So while there is probably some little adrenaline burst of being able to say, especially for Villanueva, who has worked with a lot of these people in the past, the day I walk in the door, you're all fired. From an administrative standpoint, that is potentially fraught, I would say.
Yeah. But it took McDonnell 2 years to come up with his whole senior staff, and Villanueva has his in place. He has appointed everyone to replace these people, basically. And I read the comments on Witness LA, which is the best blog about the sheriff's department. And it's a lot of former deputies and stuff. It's unclear exactly how biased these comments are, but in general, they liked the people that Villanueva picked.
Yeah.
To run the department.
Yeah, I would say an open question whether or not we're going to see a different sheriff's department from here on out, but definitely a dramatic opening to the Villanueva era.
Yes. Finally, this is fun news. This is another surprise return character that we haven't heard from in a while. The vendors, the sidewalk vendors. We had Rudy Espinoza from Learn, one of the best interviews, I think, that we have done on the show, come in and talk about the effort to get street vending in LA legalized. That finally did happen this past week.
Gosh.
It passed unanimously in the city council. It took forever.
So long.
And got a little help from the state. I haven't seen maybe quite enough coverage of that side of it. Basically, earlier this year, Jerry Brown signed the Safe Sidewalk Vending Act, saying that every municipality had to come up with local rules to regulate street vending.
And could not just leave it as something that was like of questionable, dubious legality.
Enforced just kind of whenever they feel like it.
And that was aimed pointedly, I should say, at LA, because are the largest city in the country that had not prepared any set of way to legally vend on the street. Now we do finally have one.
Yes.
Well, we have a plan to make a plan.
We have a plan. Yes. Great.
And
how many steps are there?
There were the typical, there was a lot of whining from the city council about why did the state have to come in here and like put all its rules on us? What about local control? We're like, we were doing it. We were going to do this already.
Yeah.
Like that kind of tone. Everyone on the council was very upset about the state getting involved. But the regulations that are in place, you can get a permit for street vending. There are pretty strict rules on where vendors can operate still. They're not allowed near the Staples Center, the Coliseum, where...
Walk of Fame.
Yes. Where vendors have traditionally hung out in the past. In city parks, there's a 2-vendor per acre rule. I don't really know how big an acre is, I don't think. But that seems like not that many vendors per park.
I guess it depends on the park, but
how many acres is Echo Park Lake, for example?
It's clear that you haven't had that LAPD training. Learn to eye spot an acre.
There's no cap on the number of vendors. You do have to obtain a business license, tax, and health permit. So I guess it got a little more expensive. And if you're not in compliance with the law, it's not, you don't get arrested. You get a citation, which was already the case, I believe.
Yes. They had decriminalized it already.
So it's a victory. It's a huge victory for, Rudy and Learn. They had been fighting for this exact thing for a very long time. I'm sure there are specific elements of this that they would have preferred, be more vendor friendly. But it is still a huge, win. So congratulations to those guys. What a week.
I mean, it's December now, so...
Alyssa, you look like you're desperate for the end.
And,
just in general.
I just feel like it's been a rough year. I felt like it wasn't... I felt like we were coming out of, like... I mean, the midterms, I guess, were a good ending to the year, but we'll have more time for introspection later, but...
Yeah, we should... We'll do multiple end-of-year specials. From here on out till the ball drops, it's all end-of-year specials on this show.
Are we going to do a ball drop special?
Live. In Times Square.
LA Live.
Is the rink set up?
Balls drop? Oh, City Hall, they do it at that.
Are you going to take your kids to the rink?
To the skating rink? Yeah. Oh, at LA Live?
Yeah.
The one at Pershing Square, I find more, you know, civic minded. No one should go to LA Live.
Scott, good luck on TV this week.
Actually,
LA Live, one of the donors to Bishop Salesian in the name of Jose Huizar. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. Bye bye.